I'm Tiziana Dearing. Tomorrow on the show, we will look at Governor Maura Healey's plan to pardon all people convicted of simple marijuana possession in the state. And then next Tuesday, I'll talk with the governor from our studio at the State House. So be sure to join us for both of those coming up. You're listening to Radio Boston. And now, the raid you've likely never heard of.
The violence came on February 29th, 1704. French militia and natives used the drifted snowbanks to slide over the stockade fence that protected the town. About one-third of the population was killed. 112 men, women, and children were taken captive and marched through the snow to Canada.
That is Susanna Lee of station WFCR in Amherst. She created a podcast called Captive Lands, Captive Hearts in 2004, and it marked the event now known as the Deerfield Massacre. Now, 320 years after the raid, James Swanson has finally written about the event that always intrigued him. The New York Times bestselling author studied in Deerfield in college, and The Deerfield Massacre, a surprise attack, a forced march, and the fight for the survival in early America captures the complexity of an event that killed or captured half a town. And it's been, over the centuries, ignored, explored, and turned into propaganda for the colonial cause. James Swanson is with us. James, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So when did you first learn about this? When did it first capture your imagination?
When I was in college, my junior year of college, I had been awarded a historic Deerfield Summer Fellowship in Deerfield, Massachusetts. And Deerfield is a great museum town, and it has a mile-long street filled with museum houses, museum buildings. And we study early American culture, material culture, silver, agriculture, Native American perspectives. And so that's when I learned about the Deerfield Massacre for the first time when I was in college. And it's fascinated me ever since.
And what made you want to write? Well, let me ask you a little bit different question. As I'm reading your book, I'm thinking this is, in so many ways, as big a story as any of the other New England pieces of history that I've learned about, really, you know, sort of from the beginning. How did I not know this one? So how did I not know this one, James Swanson?
Well, partly because it's from a lost, vast early America that we don't know much about anymore. The American Revolution has so eclipsed the early colonial history. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin hadn't even been born yet at the time of the Deerfield Massacre. And so the excitement and drama of the American Revolution has eclipsed much of the New England history. It's from a time that's frightening, even terrifying, but lost to us today. And so one of the reasons I wrote the book was try to resurrect that early Massachusetts from the late 1600s and early 1700s.
So in a nutshell, tell us, I mean, obviously it's a book, right? There's a book version of this, but in a nutshell for our listeners, what happened with this raid?
Well, what happened, aside from the introduction, which was quite accurate, leap year 1704, February 29th, around approximately 300 natives and French militia crept to Deerfield, climbed a snowbank, dropped into the fort, and attacked the town. They burned it down. They killed 50 people in the streets. They took 112 on a march to Canada, including Reverend Williams, Reverend John Williams, their spiritual leader, and along the way, killed 20 people along the way, people who were vulnerable, who couldn't make the march, children, pregnant women, women who had just given birth. The attack was merciless. And after about 1,000 days of captivity, Reverend Williams and the survivors of this attack returned to Massachusetts, except those who stayed back in Massachusetts, in Canada with the French. Some of them married Indians. One of the motives of the attack was to capture children and adopt them into the tribes, not as slaves, as servants, but as equal members of the tribe. So some of them chose to remain. And it really is one of the great thrilling stories of action, adventure, survival, endurance, faith, and family in early Massachusetts. So it's a forgotten tale that I really tried to resurrect. And also this, the native voices had been erased for a couple centuries. They were not part of the story. The Hurons, the Mohawks, the Abnakis, and others, the Bekumtuks. And so I try to restore their perspectives to the story also.
So there's a lot there. I want to pull it apart a little bit. As a reader, I sort of consumed the book in three parts, right? Part one is the story of what happened. Part two is the story of, over the next couple of hundred years, how the community did and didn't address the history, understand it, shape, mold it, use it. And then the part three is sort of how, in the 20th century, Deerfield finally settled on it. I'm going to play a little bit of sound for you here that touches on some of what you said. This is historian and Abenaki Indian Marge Brusak speaking with Susanna Lee of Station WCFCR in Amherst. This is for the 300th anniversary of the raid in 2004.
One of the things that makes interpreting this story so difficult is the fact that the dominant perspective on 1704 has always been the English perspective. What are these Indians doing here? What is the experience of the captives? What is it like to be in a town that's being burned and attacked? And it's so difficult to lay out the groundwork that puts that conflict into perspective.
And you do that, there's the French allying with the natives who want their land back. There are the English colonialists who see a sort of manifest destiny of their place there. And then you reflected in the two children of the pastor, one who stays in Canada and one who comes back. So unpack that a little for us.
Yes, well, and Marge is right. Marge is a good friend of mine, and she has a great perspective on the attack. In fact, we just did an event in Deerfield for 700 people, sponsored by the Pocumptuck Valley Memorial Association. After my lecture, Marge and I had a great illuminated discussion about all the perspectives behind the story. And so she's right. And so little Eunice Williams, age 7, was captured during the attack. Two of her siblings were murdered on their front doorstep by Mohawk raiders. They were swung through the air and their skulls were smashed open on the doorstep in front of Williams and his other children. Then, during the first day of the march, Eunice's mother, also named Eunice, was killed by a tomahawk attack because she fell into an icy river and was immobilized. And so Eunice was beloved by the Mohawks who captured her. They wouldn't release her. They wouldn't ransom her. They rarely let John Williams to meet with her. And so she forgot to speak English. She abandoned her Puritan faith. She dressed like a native and became one. And they loved her and adopted her, and she stayed in the tribe, and she married, had children, and she didn't come back to Deerfield again. And so for the next 25 years, John Williams lived a quarter century after the raid, after he came back to Deerfield. The one thing that haunted him for the rest of his life was his missing little girl who vanished into New France, Canada, and never came home. His other son,
Stephen
Williams, yes, was captured and adopted the native ways, at least superficially, to survive. They took him hunting. They tried to adopt him into the tribe, but he pretended to. He resisted. He wanted to come back to New England, and he did. He was released along with his father and dozens of other captives. Stephen became a minister in Longmeadow. He didn't return to Deerfield. He said, "Deerfield is a melancholy place for me." It turns out that Eunice was probably the last surviving captive of the Deerfield Massacre and the Deerfield Raid. She lived to a very old age, and she was probably the last survivor of the attack.
So one of the things that you explore, and again, we're speaking with James Swanson, best-selling author, who now has a book out, The Deerfield Massacre, A Surprise Attack, A Forced March, and The Fight for Survival in Early America. You trace the framing. It's a raid. Later, it becomes a massacre. Deerfield, at one point, doesn't work to preserve some historic artifacts like a house that was called the Old Indian House. Later, they realize they wish they had. They fight to preserve the door of that house. At one point, we get lots of language that we are familiar with in the United States about natives, Americans. So, quote unquote, about the daughter Eunice, quote unquote, she married a savage and became one. Then later becomes, she stayed in Canada, married a Mohawk, became a member of Mohawk Nation. We see a progression in our understanding of the heart of this story, James Swanson. And I wondered, as a white man stepping out now to tell this story, what surprised you about that, and how did you think about your own responsibility in it?
Well, it was very interesting because I've studied African-American history, University of Chicago. My mentor there was John Hope Franklin. And so I've long studied groups that have been disenfranchised or disfavored are written about, written out of history. So I was very sensitive to the idea that, where are the natives? Where are the Indians? Where are the tribes? Where are their stories? And so if you, anyone who reads the book will see that I've really tried to give voice to this point of view. And I also write about the appropriation of the native culture by the colonists. Think of the place names, the names of sports teams, symbols, the movies, everything from John Wayne's The Searchers to the film that Thomas Edison's company made in the early 1900s about the Deerfield Massacre, about the Bloody Brook Massacre. And you're right to mention the word massacre, because for the first 100 years, the people who survived the raid never called it a massacre. They called it the attack, the raid, even the mischief. And so it was not until a century after the raid, until 1804, when the Deerfield town minister used the word massacre a number of times to describe the attack. But the colonists didn't call it that. It was only later in the 1800s, partly because of the colonial revival, this obsession with colonial furniture, colonial traditions, the forebears, that it became known as the massacre. George Sheldon, the town historian of Deerfield, was very responsible for erasing the presence of the Indians from the raid. In fact, Marge Bruchac, who you mentioned earlier, has written a great essay about George Sheldon and how he erased Indians and later European immigrants from the story of Deerfield. And so it's a fascinating story of not just the thrilling raid, the action, the adventure, but how the raid was remembered, how it was interpreted, how it was presented. It became part of the Deerfield tourist industry. It's the only town I know that has transformed a defeat into a celebration.
That is really striking. So let's take that thought bubble and let's sort of close with it there. With that in mind, what do you want us to take away from this story of this raid in 1704?
I'd like people to take from it that it's not a simple story of the Indians attacking and wiping out a town. It's a cross-cultural story of a conflict between France and England over control of all of North America. It's the role of Indians seeing their culture erased by what they thought were the white invaders and the colonists. And it's an effort to remember them and their story. This is a great, mysterious American story of natives, of colonists, of Canadians, of Puritans, of Jesuits. There are so many players in the story. It's complex, it's fascinating, and it's one of the key stories in the history of early America that influences us to this day.
New York Times bestselling author James Swanson. The book is The Deerfield Massacre, A Surprise Attack, A Forced March, and the Fight for Survival in Early America. Thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And heads up, Swanson's best-selling book, Manhunt, The 12-Day Chase for Lincoln's Killer, premieres as a limited series on Apple TV beginning Friday, March 15th.